Welcome to Family Talk with your hosts, psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson, along with Ryan Dobson and Luann Crane.
Welcome, everyone. Today we're going to continue to air a speech given by our host, Dr. James Dobson, 12 years ago to a group of conservatives in Scottsdale, Arizona. Now, because of time constraints, we've had to divide this one-hour message into three parts, which unfortunately breaks the continuity. But our hope is that even those who aren't able to hear the program all 3 days, Ryan will still understand the flow of this message.
I'm sure they will. And if not, definitely go back to myfamilytalk.com and hear part one, and you'll hear the entire thing. This speech is one of the most passionate I've ever heard my dad give. Mm-hmm. And in the first part yesterday, he talked about the moral foundation for the universe. Proverbs describes it in the 8th chapter as God's wisdom, and it predated the creation of the heavens and the earth. Mm-hmm. It was before anything else. And this understanding of right and wrong is eternal, whereas the physical universe is going to pass away. As I said earlier, we aired the first portion of the speech yesterday. Dad, explain where you were going with this introduction to your message.
Well, you said it very well, Ryan. We dare not ignore or contradict those moral principles, which mm-hmm. the book of Romans says are actually written on our hearts. Mm-hmm. You know, if we violate God's moral laws, we do so at our peril. And that is happening routinely in American society and in government. Just 2 days ago, Sunday, the New York Times columnist Paul Krugman was on the ABC News program called This Week. And this is what he said about our budget deficit and the cost of health care. Quote, "Some years down the pike, we're going to get to the real solution, which is going to be a combination of death panels and sales taxes." In other words, Mr. Krugman thinks, apparently, that we can solve our financial problems and our Social Security shortfall by killing the elderly and by taxing the rest of us into oblivion. You know, I don't want to overstate the case, but frankly, that kind of thinking reminds me of what happened in Nazi Germany when evil and immorality became the law of the land, and it reached the highest levels of mm-hmm. government, and eventually it resulted in the murder of 5 million Jews. Now, America has not gotten to that point, and I don't think it will, but we are leaning in that direction. Now, let me go back to the speech I gave in 1998. The Republicans had run on a very different platform in 1994. It was decidedly pro-life, pro-moral, and pro-family. And they swept into power in both the House of Representatives and in the Senate that year. And then they quickly forgot those principles mm-hmm. that caused the American people, or a sizable majority of them, to put them in power. And then they governed like Democrats had been doing before them. And we all know where that led. It led to Republicans being thrown out of power. And I predicted it in the portion of the speech that we're going to hear tomorrow. And that's exactly what took place, culminating in 2008 with Republicans losing power altogether. And it very well could happen again.
Well, Doctor, let's pick up that recorded presentation you made. At the point with your comments about the Republicans' abandonment of those campaign promises from February 8th, 1998, here are the recorded comments of Dr. James Dobson.
Let me go back, if I can, to 1994. Man, I've been waiting to say this for a long time, and you guys are the ones that are going to get it. 1994, Republicans, for the first and only time, other than when Ronald Reagan was running, Republicans spoke to the hearts of that pro-moral community. I mean, they got them jazzed and excited. They ran on a pro-life platform. You hear that they ran on the contract with America. We didn't hear much about the contract with America until the Republicans had won. That wasn't what got them elected. They ran on a pro-life platform, and they energized. They energized they energized that whole community, and it was incredible. In November of 1994, when the election occurred, 9 million new voters came out who hadn't voted before and put the Republicans in power. Remember this number, 43% of the total votes that Republicans got that year came from people who identified themselves as conservative, evangelical, and pro-life. That's an incredible statistic and constituency, 43%. Newt Gingrich is speaker today because of that 43%. There is no special interest group, there is no constituency that comes anywhere near that. One of the unions had 11 or 12%. There's nothing even close to that, 43%. What did the Republicans, who were shocked to assume power and moved into all the offices of power in Washington, what did they immediately start to do but to insult that constituency? Immediately began to do it. November of 94 is when they were put into office. Overwhelming, everybody's talking about it. January, the new Congress comes in, and January 20th or so, the president comes down to the Congress to make his State of the Union address, and Newt Gingrich chooses somebody to respond to the president. Who did he choose? Christine Todd Whitman. The absolute antithesis of everything that constituency stands for. She is pro-homosexual activism. She's pro-condom distribution. She is pro-abortion. She's pro-partial birth abortion. She even named a truck stop for Howard Stern on the New Jersey Turnpike, which is the only thing she's done so far that I agree with. Naming a toilet for Howard Stern is the only logical thing she has done. They put a symbol of the immoral, amoral constituency up in front of the people who had just handed leadership to the Republicans. And from there on down, it was one insult right after another. You already know them, so I don't have time to talk about all of them. We come now to 1996. And this is a part that my view that you may disagree with. But Bob Dole did everything he could to insult those people during that campaign. Bob Dole said harsher things about Gary Bauer than he did Bill Clinton. And it just seemed like all the way through he was determined to distance himself from this constituency that had put the Republicans in power. And I spent 3 hours with him one day asking him to do the same thing I said to Senator Graham. And I couldn't even get him to say that if elected, I will appoint pro-life justices to the Supreme Court. He would not say that. And then, of course, he went to San Diego. And they stripped from that convention every element of the usual presentations that dealt with the pro-moral issues. Every bit of it. All that was left was kind of show and tell and talk about the economy and money, but there was no reference at all to the moral issues, or very, very little. And Bob Dole got on national television, looked straight into those cameras, and said, and you remember, I will not be bound by the platform that's been written. And indeed, I haven't even read it. And folks, you do realize that this pro-moral community that I'm talking about worked through the democratic process to elect representatives to come to San Diego to write that platform and to put that pro-life plank in there. And Bob Dole is saying to the nation, I don't even plan to read it. I will not be bound by it. And television sets went off all over the country. Now, remember I gave the figure 43% in 1994? In 1996, that percentage was 29%. That 14% right there represented the difference between winning and losing in that election. Where'd they go? Republicans said, now they don't have any place to go. Where are they going to go? Well, some of them did go. Some of them voted for Bill Clinton. And some of them stayed home. And some of them, like myself, voted for another candidate. I want to say to, with reference again to that pro-moral community that's out there, from what I'm hearing and what people are saying to me, and a man, a physician from Southern California, called me this week to say this. There is great discouragement with the Republican Party, great irritation, and indeed there is a sense of betrayal out there for what has occurred since 1994. And I'm going to reflect that to you, looking at the record in regard to the moral issues. I'm not talking about taxes, not talking about the military, not talking about building bridges and roads and all that sort of thing. I'm talking about the moral foundation to the universe, those principles that we know are right. Last year, a Republican-led Congress, House and Senate, gave $900 million to Planned Parenthood to take that abortion message around the world. And we're supposed to get excited about supporting that? You talk about betrayal? $900 million to Planned Parenthood to go to these Catholic countries, these Muslim countries, where they don't accept abortion, and to begin to propagandize and begin to work to spread that horrible procedure around the world. Republicans did that. And shame on them for doing so. The issue of parental consent also takes my breath away. For 200 years, for 300 years, parents have held the absolute authority for the medical care of their children. Indeed, you cannot give an aspirin to a child, a minor, of another family, or bind a scratch, put iodine on it, or anything, without running the risk of being charged with battery without that parent's permission. And yet now, as we heard this morning, a 13-year-old girl can go off to school. Parents think she stays there. Some feminist counselor or some teacher can pack that child off that campus and take that child across town to an abortion clinic where she goes through a procedure that she may remember for the rest of her life. She will remember it for the rest of her life. And she comes home that night, and her parents not only can't stop it, they're not entitled to even know about it. After the fact, she could continue to bleed. She could have an infection. She could have severe emotional consequences to this, and it's none of the parents' business. A 13-year-old girl is some days a child. Some days she acts a little grown up, but usually she acts like a child. That child's in the hands of people who have a very different philosophy. They don't accept the moral standard of the universe, and they have control of that child. Did you hear last year about that teacher in Crystal Park, Illinois, who had an affair with a 14-year-old girl and got her pregnant? And he packs her off to the abortion clinic where they inject her with Depo-Provera and other hormones to get rid of that child. He took her there three times to cover his affair. And by law, they couldn't tell the parents. They couldn't tell the parents that the teacher is bringing that kid there. And by law, they had to give that kid the medication. Congressman Istook, who fights for the things we believe and I appreciate, got excited about this. And he took that to the Republican leadership last year, and he tried to get the issue brought on the floor. He wanted to vote on it. He could not even get the Republicans to vote on it. Not only did they lose, they never even voted on it. And they, not only could they not pass parental consent, which puts the power back in the parents' hands, they couldn't even pass parental notification, where we're willing to tell parents what we're doing with their kids. And this is a Republican-led House? and Senate? What about the National Endowment for the Arts? $99 million more to offend people of faith. Couldn't defeat it. How pitiful. What about the marriage penalty, for Pete's sake? Average family spends $1,500 more in taxes for the privilege of being married, and Republicans haven't been able to deal with that. Not enough money, we say. How about school choice? How about school prayer? How about religious liberty? How about the safe sex ideology? This one really does bother me. 25 years ago, when that condom distribution program started, and we've spent nearly $3 billion on it now, there were only two sexually transmitted diseases at an epidemic proportion: syphilis and gonorrhea. They were both easily controlled by antibiotics. Now there are over 20, and they're at an epidemic proportion. It is incredible. One in four Americans has not a sexually transmitted disease, because that includes the bacteria, which can be treated. Set those aside, even though some of the diseases are becoming resistant to antibiotics, gonorrhea and others, but set those aside, sexually transmitted bacteria. One in four has an incurable, lifetime, sexually transmitted virus. They will suffer from it for the rest of their lives, and many will die from them. You hear an awful lot about HIV. Very few women die of HIV. Some of them do, but very few. Far more die of HPV, the human papillomavirus. If it were not for HIV, it would be getting headlines. 4,000 women per year in this country die of cervical cancer as a secondary result of infection with the human papillomavirus. It causes genital warts. It interferes with sexual intercourse. The rest of their lives, their marriages, will be affected by this. And it is spreading like wildfire. A study that was done at the University of California, Berkeley, a few years ago, tried to evaluate just how widespread human papillomavirus is. We know genital herpes is out there. That's another one that is not curable. You get it, you got it, and you will keep it forever. At the University of California, Berkeley, they evaluated all the young women, average age 21, who came into the Student Health Center for routine gynecological exams in the course of 1 year. And they quietly evaluated them for the human papillomavirus. 47% of them had it. It is incredible. And it is spread, despite condoms, because it is spread from areas of the genitalia that are not covered by condoms. And the Congress gave $200 million more this year to safe sex ideology. It is a failed policy. It is a miserable, embarrassing, disgraceful, harmful policy. And the money keeps going up, $4,000 more than the year before. To their credit, they did include $50 million or $60 for abstinence education, but that money has largely been co-opted by the other side, the feminists and others in state health departments that have used it for their purposes. And Congress has not set up regulations to prevent that. And so it continues and it goes on. Pornography. There has not been one indictment of a hardcore pornographer since 1993. Now, that is primarily Bill Clinton's fault, because the Justice Department is not doing its job. But who's talking about it? Who's talking about it? Now, folks, I know all the answers to this, because I've been in conversation with many Republican leaders about this. I've had this conversation with a lot of folks. I know the answers. I know what they say. They say, we don't have the votes. You can't expect us to pass things when we don't have the votes. We got a lot of moderate Republicans, and we only have a 10-vote majority in the House. We don't have the votes. We can't pass these things. Well, maybe. Maybe. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the most liberal justice in the history of the United States, an ACLU lawyer, one who will defend abortion to her dying day, was confirmed by a vote of 97-0 in the Senate. There was not one conservative Republican senator who had the guts to put principle above who knows what. 97-0, what a disgrace. When I asked them about it, they said, well, we feel the president is entitled to make those appointments. And I said, talk to me again about Robert Bork. Where was that principal when he was appointed?
Dad, those are powerful words where we're ending your talk today. This is a speech given by you in 1998, referring to the promises made to the voters in 1994, which amazingly were quickly forgotten by the GOP. For those that listened yesterday and today, it ought to be clear where you're heading. Maybe some people have only heard today. Spell it out for us, Dad. Where are you heading now?
Well, Ryan, I think people can get it, but there could be great relevance from 1994 and 1998 to the class of 2010. Once again, Republicans have been given an overwhelming majority in the House of Representatives and five new seats in the Senate because in most cases they promised fiscal responsibility and loyalty to conservative principles. But this question has to be asked. Will they deliver on those pledges or will they get Potomac fever like their predecessors did back in the 1990s? That is the question that I have. I'm not presupposing it. I don't know. Maybe this class is very different.
But, Doctor, let's go back to the pro-moral, pro-family, pro-life issues that you referred to throughout this speech. Christianity Today, in its issue released on November 11th, right after the election, published an article that began with this phrase, "Abortion issues seemed left in the dust as economic concerns drove this year's elections. But on Tuesday, voters ousted several pro-life Democrats and ushered in fiscal conservatives who tend to oppose abortion." Is that the way you see the election results?
Well, that's not the way I see it, Luann. And I think when people see the results in the broader context, they'll see that what Christianity Today wrote is at least not the whole picture. Here are the statistics about the voters from what has now been tabulated and published. Number one, pro-lifers gained 53 seats in the House, and there are only 151 abortion supporters remaining out of 435. That means that 284 members of the House are pro-life.
Wow.
That kind of sounds like the life issue was an important part of it. Number two, 77 of 93 members of the freshman class are committed pro-lifers. 77 out of 93. And number three, the entire leadership of the House of Representatives is committed to the pro-life position. And number four, 52% of the members of the Tea Party movement have now been identified as conservative evangelicals. Obviously, that doesn't sound like abortion was irrelevant as the backdrop for this election. The sanctity of life played a key role behind the scenes. So this is what I would say to Republicans, and this is how it relates to the speech that we've been listening to. What happened on November the 2nd is not a victory for the Republican Party. It is an opportunity, just like they had back in 1994. They have been sent to Washington with a message from the voters, and I pray that they will not forget it. I think it's our responsibility to keep a close eye on what occurs in Congress in these next 2 years. I know that Republicans don't have a majority in the Senate, and of course, Barack Obama is in the White House, but they can fight for what they believe and what they said to the American people.
Well, we certainly will be keeping a close eye on those things here. on this Family Talk broadcast, Doctor. We also have some links to outstanding pro-family, pro-morality organizations that are tracking what's happening in D.C. around the clock.
And of course, we're not done with the speech. Mm-hmm. We've got one more day to deal with this important topic. So be sure to join us tomorrow. If for any reason you can't or you missed yesterday's program and you need to catch up, you can always go to myfamilytalk.com and stream the broadcast or download our podcast.
And of course, that's where you also can make a donation to help stand with us in this fight. That's myfamilytalk.com. If you don't have internet access, just give us a call toll free, 877-732-6825, 877-732-6825.
Thanks for listening, and make plans to be with us next time.